Namaste, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Smarter Shipping with Oceana, Enhancing Operational Efficiency and Sustainability. We're pleased to host this session in collaboration with Global Spatial Technology Solutions, and we look forward to exploring how Oceana's AI-powered platform helps optimize port calls, enable just-in-time arrivals, and support a more efficient and sustainable shipping industry. So let's dive right in. I'll now hand it over to Andrew Black, Director of Supply Chain Solutions at GSTS, to introduce our speakers and start the discussion. Andrew, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kayla. And I'll pull up my my slides here. So again, thank you so much, Andrew Black. I'm Director of Supply Chain Solutions with GSTS. I'll start with saying regrets from my colleague Krista Foster. Poor Krista is unwell this morning and was unable to make it. But also joined by Julien Robert from CSL, Tommy Poulin from the Montreal Port Authority, Etienne Andry from the Laurentian Pilots Authority, Jack Malosh, General Manager of Marine Information Systems with the St. Lawrence Seaway Management Corporation, and Paul Blomeris with Clear Seas. A heartfelt thank you to the panelists and I'm very pleased to be facilitating this group of collaborators. These are organizations that we GSTS are quite familiar with, and we'll touch on the nature of that relationship in this presentation. If you speak to a stakeholder in the maritime sector, you'll get no shortage of opinions and ideas about how port calls can be improved. What we typically hear about is around silos, lack of data exchange, lack of coordination, particularly in that ship-to-shore interface. Now, if you get maritime stakeholders to connect with one another, you can enable interesting and important outcomes, just-in-time arrivals, port call optimization. And that's the thrust of today's webinar. The most important part of today is going to be the panel discussion and the questions that come from webinar attendees. So thank you, and you are welcome to submit using the Q&A function. We'll answer those after the presentation. At the top of the agenda, I'll provide a bit of context on GSTS and in particular our Oceana platform. And then we'll speak a bit about the collaborative optimization solution, which is really about focusing on a multi-party collaboration. And we'll dig deeper into the topic with our panel participants. Be it environmental, commercial, or geopolitical in nature, the maritime world is fraught with risk. And this creates unpredictability in a supply chain world that requires goods to move on schedule. In today's dynamic, we see vessels sail fast to get into the queue at their port of call and then wait because services aren't ready. This is both expensive in terms of unnecessary fuels consumed and harmful, costly to the environment in the form of unnecessary harmful emissions released. Shipping, at least since the advent of steam, shipping has been this way. It doesn't always have to be this way. So I'll speak a bit about Oceana, GSTS's flagship product, a dual-use proprietary SaaS platform. Our users include governments, be it transportation agencies or navies, governments, ships, ports, pilots, waterways, and others. They are brought together in a common platform, each with defined permissions based on their needs and access. Oceana incorporates the latest developments in AI and data analytics and was designed to ingest and process a wide variety of data sources, ranging from AI, global AIS data, satellite imagery, weather data, vessel characteristics, and more. An embedded communications channel also allows multiple users to share information in real time, including users in different organizations. Oceana is rooted in data governance, prioritizing data quality and security while providing controlled data access permissions. This diagram paints a bit of the picture of how Oceana is brought together, ingesting multiple data sources. And at any one point in time, Oceana is ingesting about 30 global data sets. These are often augmented by local customer provided data sets. AI-based algorithms are running in the background to provide real-time insights, and Oceana can be deployed on the whole, or the output from various AI models can be integrated with existing systems. An important point about Oceania is that it's built to augment what's already there. And so this simplified diagram shows about how Oceania connects maritime stakeholders and their systems, acting as a federated data platform. Through connecting maritime players with real-time data, that collaborative optimization solution that we're going to pivot to in a minute provides a dynamic platform. We give users the insights they are looking for in the interface they want. So some customers want to pull insights from Oceania into their systems via API. That's fine. Others want to use the Oceania web interface. Again, that's fine. We work with what's already there. And so now we're going to turn our attention to the particular solution that is the focus of today's webinar, the collaborative optimization solution. And I'll start by providing a bit of background on that. In March of 2024, Canada's Ocean Supercluster awarded GSTS a $12 million two-year contract to advance the capabilities of Oceania, specifically those capabilities that facilitated data sharing and exchange and empowering maritime collaboration. This project was awarded in partnership with Canada's Steamship Lines and in collaboration with the Port of Montreal, the Laurentian Pilotage Authority, and Clearseas. Since then, the St. Lawrence Seaway Management Corporation was added to the OSC project consortium, as well as our customers at the Port of Trois-Rivières. The Seaway, incidentally, and the Port of Trois-Rivières are neighbors to the Port of Montreal. Working together, Oceania's latest capability, collaborative optimization solution, will improve efficiency and sustainability of maritime operations. The COS, for short, connects ports, terminals, ships, waterways, and pilotages via a common platform, and data that is operational data that's stored today in separate systems gets brought together in one system to provide that data-driven decision-making in real time. To ensure seamless data exchange and interoperability with different systems, Oceania was designed based on IMO standards and the DCSA Open API specs for just-in-time port calls. The collaborative optimization solution has a number of sustainability-oriented benefits. Data-driven AI predictive insights enables coordinated planning and enhanced decision-making. Facilitating just-in-time arrivals enables ships to optimize their steaming speed, minimize time at anchor, decrease fuel consumption, and reduce emissions. At the bottom of the screen, you'll see the six relevant UN Sustainable Development Goals that are associated with this initiative. This is a direct result of the Port of Montreal and GSTS being recognized by the World Port Sustainability Program for the work we're doing with this Ocean Supercluster project. So the key objectives is about connecting all the maritime stakeholders to facilitate data sharing and empowering collaboration. And in doing so, stakeholders receive more accurate information on vessel movements and resource delays in real time. This enhances planning and coordination and streamlining vessel berthing processes in support of just-in-time arrivals. Real-time decision-making intelligence is used to support route optimization towards green voyages in dynamic environments. Some of the expected outcomes include a reduction of delays for all maritime stakeholders, improved transit times for ships, decreased wait times at anchor, reduced fuel consumption and inherent GHG emissions, and streamlined vessel reporting and increased berth occupancy. Just for some awareness of where this is, our functional testing of the platform is ongoing. Our operational validation testing is scheduled to commence in the spring. Now, before we start the panel discussion, I want to show one last diagram that focuses on Oceania as a federated data platform, integrating operational data from multiple systems, be it a terminal operating system or a TOS, port management system, or a pilot dispatch. Oceania spatially and temporally correlates all this data along with other external data sources such as weather and AI, and employs AI algorithms. Outputs from these AI models provide real-time data insights to all stakeholders, including but not limited to ship owners, operators, ship agents, pilots, and harbor masters. Some of the examples of real-time data insights include delays in vessel movements or resource availability, and the recommended speed for a vessel to arrive just in time to make a revised berthing time window, either because the ETD of the current vessel currently at berth has changed, or the pilot is delayed arriving at the pilot boarding station. These data insights are displayed in the web application and again, also made available by API. And noteworthy that participants can also receive mobile alerts as well, email notifications and mobile alerts. So with that said, on behalf of my colleague in absentia, Krista, and myself, thank you again for joining us today. I'm going to stop sharing my screen here, and we're going to pivot seamlessly into the panel discussion. So as noted at the top, we are going to have a panel discussion that receives questions from the audience. So you are welcome to use the Q&A function. In Krista's absence, I may speak a bit more than a moderator normally would in answering some of these questions, just to touch on a few of the key points from the perspective of GSTS. That said, the first person I'll put on the hot seat is Julien Robert from the CSL Group. And Julien, the question I want to ask you is around what supply chain value created through streamlining that ship-to-shore interface, and who benefits from that?
I think the short answer is everyone benefits, and how they benefit will vary depending on who we're talking about. I might give a few examples. So from a ship operator perspective, there's a lot of different benefits. One, potentially we could have faster turnaround and carry more cargo with the time we have available. Two, we can oftentimes save on fuel if ever we get a chance to slow down ahead of time. And then there are other benefits. If we don't need to go to anchor at all, then we might save on port pilots or tug hire if ever that's needed for a given port. And overall, there's a lot of benefits for a ship operator. But port operations would also benefit. Less congestions means less headache in managing port lineups and port anchorages. The tug operator, if they need to come less often, and they can just come once, it's better for them too. Same for the pilots at the port. So sort of everyone can benefit, and ultimately anyone wanting to ship cargo ends up benefiting, because if we can reduce and optimize all of this, we can reduce cost, and that cost saving can be passed on to anyone that would like to ship cargo out of this port.
Thanks, Julian. That's really interesting because you touched on a number of different constraints that a vessel sees as they are entering a port. I think you may have touched on all of them. That was a good and comprehensive list. And of course, there is that correlation between that and cost. Second question I'm going to put out to the broader group. We're living in the age of AI. AI is going to solve all the world's problems. Of course, we are a maritime AI firm. I joke a bit, but AI is extraordinarily valuable. But why in the age of AI is collaboration so important to enabling just-in-time arrivals and port call optimization? Putting this out to the group.
I can get us going on this one. So AI can definitely help in understanding what could be a good solution. However, there's at this moment, a lot of information that's not currently easily accessed by any digital mean. A lot of information exchanged by radio, phone calls, bilateral voice communication. So we're sort of limited on the short term from that front. And I believe there's also another limitation is that all of this will need a very strong human vetting, because the impact of getting anything wrong can very quickly grow into six figures. So anything recommended by an AI would definitely need collaboration to vet that the plan makes sense and that everyone's in agreement, and a final sign-off from the different parties that this is the plan we're putting forward and that we're going to try to make work, and that would be legally binding with that approval.
Thanks very much, Julien. That's great. That point about human vetting is really important. Right now, AI in our sector is there as a decision support tool, right? It's not, we're a long ways away from that kind of broader automation that people consider when they think about the potential of AI.
And
Tommy,
if I can, just if I can add, the AI is good as the data it sees. Sometimes the signal, let's say for a ship going in the seaway, going to broadcast his destination for Hamilton, but might need to stop in Montreal to get the seaway inspection or to take bunkers. So it's good to have a live picture and not use outdated snapshots to not be caught off guard in that situation.
Yeah.
And I was going to add to Tommy's point from the CWIS perspective, a series of locks and connecting locks to be able to manage traffic efficiently, AI tool really helps into planning and the resources needed, whether they're on board, whether they're piloted, or whether they're ourselves at the CWIS.
Yeah. Just to add, maybe because I really like the portion also that Julien brought up about the vetting part, because it's quite key and ensuring a very strong system. As you know, with the launch and pilotage, our mandate is really to ensure efficient pilotage services in the St. Lawrence and the Saguenay, and our participation, into evolving technology like what GSCS has put together with our partners we have here on this webinar is absolutely great. But from the onset, collaboration, is key between the entities to serve like the strengthening, basically the existing ties, operational informations, and support synergies. I think we are appropriate to inform all the individuals and companies that are involved, and also serve to better inform the politics realities that we actually have to ship owner and ship companies and the other partners we have like the Port of Montreal and Le Seaway.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'll chime in and just and maybe add the final portion is that my organization works at that interface with the general public and the wider community, coastal and indigenous communities. And I think there's a lot of perhaps a lack of trust of the industry due to a lack of transparency. And so I think one major step forward that this project offers is that availability of that quality information that can help to build that trust with the public and coastal communities. And so this level of collaboration provides that well-vetted quality data and information that allows communication with public and with the wider stakeholder group. And so it's a major step forward, I think.
Okay, thanks, Paul. That transparency and that lack of stakeholder trust is a theme we'll come back to a little later on. That's a great great one. Tommy, I'll put you on the hot seat next, sir. What are the benefits realized by the port and its partners through port call optimization? And
Port Council, there are real practical benefits for the port and all its for all its partners. First, helps cut down delays and speed up vessel transit, making sure arrival are perfect time with berth and the service readiness, so ships spend less time waiting and more time moving. By optimizing the speed for just in time, we also see a significant reduction in fuel consumption and greenhouse gas emission. Resource scheduling gets major upgrade too. Either pilots, tugs, terminal teams can plan their shift more efficiently, and berth occupancy is optimized with better visibility. Over time, this leads to a stronger coordination across the entire supply chain. Port operations come with inland logistics and also with carrier schedule, because that's part of the old logistics system. And with real-time update on vessel movement and potential delays, everyone benefits from a better operation awareness and cost control, making day-to-day operations smoother and more predictable.
Very well, thank you, sir. That's great. The next question I noted to panelists earlier. This is a question originally we had teed up for Krista, but it actually works equally well if we put it out to the operators on this call. The organizations on this call and in a port ecosystem, they all have their own systems. A port has a port management information system, a PMIS. A terminal has a terminal operating system, or a TOS. Pilots have a pilot dispatch and often a billing system that they have. Ships have various systems that support their operations. Why, if they all have those needs, why do we need a common collaboration platform? So again, put this one out to the operators in the group.
I think the key here is that for this to work, we need all parties to be part of the same platform, and that includes sometimes competitors. So, for the Port of Montreal to use this efficiently, we'd need ourselves to be on there, but also some other carriers. And it's very difficult for any one party to try to get competitors to come into our own platforms and collaborate into our own system. So we sort of need the middleman to coordinate all of these parties into like an impartial, trusted way, so that everyone's okay to come to the table, share their information, provide the necessary details and actually make this work. So that, personally, that's why I believe the middleman and the trusted partner is necessary, and it's not a one company that can solve this problem on its own.
And I think it's the first time we see that everybody's collaborating on the same system to bring their own information available for others.
Yeah. And I think it shows also a level of maturity by the various organizations here on the table, to, and I'm sure others that have come up in terms of technological advances to manage their business. And that's we're at the point right now where we can start, you know, exchanging information that will play a role in terms of efficiency in the maritime corridor. Of course, albeit not the detriment of maritime safety and security and the commercial competitiveness. But I think the key there is collaboration and exchange of information that are valid and timely.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks. You know, I think that Julien started by talking about, you know, competitors together in a platform, not just different stakeholders. And that's a really interesting part. So it's one of the reasons that you know, data governance and security is so important for us in the design of this. We've taken the approach of, like, you know, bring in the data that we need to bring in, not the other stuff. Like, you know, and if it's commercially sensitive, make sure that's properly partitioned into a part of Oceana that others will never be able to see. Because the trust thing, Paul touched on the kind of external stakeholder side of things, but that operational trust is a big challenge too, right? Yeah,
that's a great point, Andrew. For all parties have to trust that the middleman will take the decisions that are best for the overall industry and not favor any one particular player. So that's a key component, because this trust is not always easily gained, and it can be quickly lost if ever there's a lack of transparency or there's a favorism in some capacity.
Yeah, you know, and one of the interesting things on when you get into sustainability as a theme is that there are some outcomes that can only be realized by collaborating. And what's interesting here is, you know, we get excited about a world where we talk about low carbon fuels as propelling the vessels of the future. But that at scale, that's still several years away, and in some cases, it's years away from being years away at scale. And yet, something like this, you know, enabling that, you know, disrupting that sail fast and wait idea, that allows you to realize quantifiable reductions in fuel costs and harmful emissions with today's fuels and today's vessels, right? So that's a meaningful step ahead. In addition to the Port of Montreal, Etienne, this next question will go your way. The Laurentian Pilotage Authority also works with many other organizations, including the Port of Trois-Rivières, the Saint-Laurent Seaway, who are also part of this project team. How do you see the collaborative optimization solution providing value for the pilotage if or when we deploy this for a broader maritime ecosystem?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So as mentioned before, working in a consortium like we have right now with COS opens up all kinds of new opportunities and perspective for information sharing, and provides, you know, in our opinion, a better understanding of our partners' realities, which sometimes I think some of you mentioned earlier, like, is very stovepipe in terms of information silos. But in our case here, if I was to give you a bit more concrete example of how we're using now this information, you know, internally. So LP is working right now in collaboration with GSCS to implement, like, a traffic forecasting tool to specifically for use of our Les Escoumins pilot station as an example of efficiency improvement. So the use of this feature, just such as the geofencing, will enable better traffic anticipation and thus support a more efficient pilot boat maintenance planning system. And ultimately, this will equip the LPA with additional tools to ensure resilience and efficiency for the maritime organization and of the piloted services for the users on the St. Lawrence.
Thank you. Jack, you're championing you and the Seaway are championing a broader vision with your Voyage Information System. How do you see Oceana supporting that optimization?
So I'll quickly start, Andrew, by saying while Oceana was being developed by GSTS, the Seaways, US and Canada, were building their own voyage information system. So the COA, for everybody's knowledge, the series is about 15 locks, 3,700 kilometers long waterways. And a little like we were saying earlier, we're a little like a neutral partner. We deal with the carriers, we deal with pilotage, we deal with the ports. And collectively, we already are a collaborative tool or organism, let's say. So the Voyage Information System is really a data sharing platform, a data sharing interface between all of the above, actually. It's an extension of what Oceana was doing in the St. Lawrence River into the Great Lakes. So by exchanging data from our stakeholders and exchanging data with Oceana, adding the AI component, we were able to build, or we're building, we're able to build and using right now a predictive engine using AI, using data from the stakeholders and historical data from the Seaway to be able to better plan traffic. So this predictive engine through GSTS and through the Seaways is actually giving better knowledge to our stakeholders of the just-in-time process of vessels to ports and locks, even congestion.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Jack. And certainly a bold visionary piece by the Seaway that that you and the team are leading. Next question I'll put out to all speakers. The collaborative optimization solution capabilities, which enable streamlined vessel and voyage documentation and information exchange through a single platform, are changing how those kind of forms and permissions are done in port. Why is this an improvement? And maybe speak a bit about why that kind of streamlined vessel clearance activity, why there's value in that for maritime stakeholders.
I'll go. I think it's absolutely something better. I think a single platform for vessel and voyage management is a huge step forward. Instead of juggling email, spreadsheet, and different system, we can access the same synchronized data through one either web interface or API. The updates are instant. The information is consistent. The collaboration is much smoother. It's faster, more accurate, and simply easier for all partners to be on the same page. A better decision and more efficient operation across the board, I think.
Very much.
I'll add to you again, Tommy, in the sense that the first lock of the Seaway is just outside of the Port of Montreal. We get pilot exchanges at that lock from the Laurentian pilots to the Great Lake pilots, where ships coming and going to the Port of Montreal or elsewhere. All this is done by phone calls through different traffic control centers. So if we automate all this, if we take all these processes and rent and simplify them, there's a benefit to all of us.
I'll echo this. Any paperwork that can be reduced, either to create paperwork or send paperwork or forward paperwork, is a huge time saving for anyone operating in this network, and we really welcome this type of improvements.
Thanks, Julian. You know, that ties into this broader theme of maritime single window that is prominent on the global agenda right now. And you know, anything we can do to simplify the process of information exchange is great. A couple more prepared questions. We are starting to get some questions through the Q&A, and we'll get to those in a moment. But if you have questions that they've been wondering about and we haven't answered them yet, please can feel free to submit. We'll have some time to answer audience questions in a moment. Paul, the next question is going to come back to you. Do you see any challenging policy objectives for safer or more sustainable shipping that Oceana can help solve?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and it's highlighted a little bit by the discussion we just had about the kind of single point of reference for information. I think Canada, maybe as an artifact of the way that shipping and governance is divided up between Transport Canada and the Canadian Coast Guard and the port authorities and the pilotage authorities, has meant that, to be honest, I think Canada in particular is a little bit backward in the way that the level of digital digitalization of the industry. So as we pointed out, each individual organization has quite advanced, but the level of an integrated digital platform. And so the one you just mentioned in terms of implementation of a maritime single window as a policy objective, the, you know, this initiative can certainly contribute to. But then I think thinking a little bit broader than that, I think the broader question of, you know, social license to operate as an industry is always front and center, I think. And, you know, you talked a bit about sustainability and environmental impacts, and you mentioned the, you know, greenhouse gas reduction from voyages. But I think if you ask members of the public and coastal communities what they're concerned about, they're mostly concerned about shipping safety and preventing oil spills and preventing the direct impacts of shipping. So they don't want to see ships anchoring. They don't want to see ships colliding or running aground. And so the opportunities that this kind of a platform offers in terms of risk reduction and direct impact mitigation should not be understated. I think that the opportunity to say that ships can safely and efficiently reach their destinations with full visibility, which will allow, you know, a much better access for the, you know, there are wider, the system is made up of oil spill response organizations, Coast Guard, others that can make sure that those operations continue to be safe as well as efficient, I think is a really important objective that shouldn't be lost.
I'm glad you use the term social license. It's a good, you know, from my past life at a port, it's one I'm quite familiar with. You know, you get a commercial license by being a business that functions well and is profitable. You get that social license by engaging, and in this case, by being transparent and sharing. So thanks for that, Paul. That's great. The last of the prepared questions I'll put out to the entire group. The maritime environment is dynamic. A missed berth window could have cascading impacts on others. In an unpredictable world, why is it important for you to have advanced awareness of what's happening in a port?
That's it. I can go.
Go ahead. Vas-y, Tommy, y'a pas de problème.
I was going to bring an example of the summer low water level in the Laurentian region. Conditions were changing day to day, affecting safe draft, transit speed, and pilotage window. With advanced situation awareness, pilot, ports, thermal, and cars, they'll see the same real-time picture and act early, resequence port call, update ETA, ATBs, adjust speed and load plan. And I think that proactive can turn an evolving constraint into a managed event that can help everyone in their safety schedule and cost for everyone.
Yeah, just to follow on to Tommy's point here, for LPA, the timeliness of information is important. And by learning the real-time information about the port operational events, like you just mentioned, because of the example of what happened or what's happening right now in the port for this summer, of course, the lack of water really affects transits. So it really helps us, you know, having to look forward, you know, having that timely information from all our partners. Yep.
I'll say from the seaway side, whether it's a port or a lock, it's a little similar in the sense that if you miss the opportunity of taking your lockage, you may lose a pilot, you may actually have to wait your turn because there's another vessel in front of you or a vessel in the opposite direction. So sharing that information is just more efficient for the whole system in our case.
I feel something else that's important to see here when it comes to cascading impact is that oftentimes shipping is just one piece of the puzzle of a larger supply chain. And the more in advance we can give warnings to every stakeholder that something's about to change, the more time we give them to adjust. And sometimes it can make the difference between just a bit of extra work and the whole system being stopped for days. So, you know, for example, if a vessel's coming in a port to pick up a cargo that's being railed in, and the cargo is still on the right car when we know something's about to change and the vessel won't be there when expected. If we give them the information, then they can stop the rail car, rearrange their deliveries, get another ship in. if we don't give them enough heads up, they might still get the rail cars in, discharge the cargo, get it ready on the dock. And by the time they know the vessel won't be coming in, it's sort of too late to do anything about it. And we still have to wait for that vessel to come in and pick up their cargo, and no one else can go through the system in between. So advanced warning, heads up, and precision in anything that's communicated is key in all of this.
Definitely helps. I think anticipate you know, the effects on the transit and synchronizing our actions, I think, throughout the maritime community. I mean, we all want the ship to be make it to port or leave actually on time to be able to make it through reverse transit. But that's really, really important.
I mean, it's the maritime world, right? Things are going to happen, and things go wrong, and you know, these can range from you know, a storm to a you know, a pilot rolling his ankle on his way out to you know, move towards the pilot boarding station, and therefore creating delays that the supply chain didn't anticipate. I like that comment Julien made about just, you know, that this is part of, you know, this is orchestrated part of a broader supply chain, and the maritime world is but one part of that, and that's bang on. It's that there's so many different stakeholders and that are impacted by these. So that gets us through the prepared questions, and again, we will turn to some audience questions here in a moment. And so thank you for those. Again, for those who are participating, you're welcome to submit questions using the Q&A function. We have a couple. The first I think I have to handle. Can you present a case study that illustrates the gains from the COS relative to a non-COS baseline? And so the answer is that this project started with us having some forecasts as to what we thought the savings would be, and we anticipated conservatively that the reductions both in fuel costs and in emissions was in the vicinity of 5 to 10% or more. As we go to operational validation in the spring, that is the hypothesis that we test, and so that is that is the moment in time that we'll have a case study to illustrate that. So good question. The next question that we have, understand that initiatives like this, the collaborative optimization solution, involves a host of complexities and its own challenges due to stakeholder involvement, especially also seeing the long traditional functions of the industry. What are the key challenges or the toughest part on top of the chart for the solution, such as Oceania and GSTS, and stakeholders like ports and terminals and other ecosystem players in this initiative? So what are the biggest challenges that we've run into? I'm going to open this up to the group first before GSTS provides its comment.
I feel like there are a few challenges. This is a very difficult problem to solve. So I'll start by saying this. Now, if I had to pinpoint one, from our perspective, I feel like the scale necessary for this to work needs a lot of partners to come to the table. And, you know, it can be easy to convince one or two partners to try to do it. But if we really are to do this on a global scale, there'll need to be dozens or hundreds of partners if we try to scale this to a larger operation. And it gets very challenging to get all of those parties to want to come in and collaborate. And everyone has a different appetite for technology, a different, you know, current technological landscape, and not the same reality to make this work. So making sure we've got the critical mass to me is a big challenge with this subject.
Thanks, Judy. I might add within this, while others think about their answers. I mean, first of all, collaboration is hard. It's not been the ace in the hole of the maritime sector, far from it. And there's various different reasons for that. And some of that can be addressed on the technical side, some of it very much on the people side. And I'll jump into the people side for a moment. People, you know, humans are generally creatures of comfort. And when you're asking to do something like this, it is different. And so one of the very practical challenges that you run into is a really good question. Practical challenges that you run into is just the resistance, because people are comfortable with what they do today. And oftentimes we spend more time, we don't spend enough time thinking about the opportunity of different ways of doing things. Anyone else want to ask, chime in with any thoughts on some of the key challenges or the toughest parts about participating in something like a collaborative system?
Go ahead, Tommy.
I was going to say data security is a big concern, I think, for everybody, data privacy and security. And I think it's all getting involved very well. But I think it's one of the things that sometimes we don't think of. That's always there in our discussions.
Yeah, I was going to add, and I guess I'm a little bit of an observer here, and I've been watching the team putting this together. And one of the challenges, I think, is the temptation to innovate in the process of digitalization. So I think we heard some of the speakers talking about the fact that current processes are often currently phone calls and radio calls. And so there's huge benefits in just simply digitalizing the existing process in terms of traceability and accuracy. And so there's, but that's kind of boring. And you can see that the team's quite excited about the opportunities to innovate, right? So now they're saying, well, can we put an optimization routine in here? And we've never done it like this, but can we agree to a different way to negotiate something? And that, I think, produces additional risks and challenges for this initiative. So we're excited by these opportunities, but now we're trying to design the plane while we're flying it. And so I think that's, so sometimes I think we have to return back to some of the basics and say there is huge benefits in just having, a digitalized version of this process flows that we have today. And let's make sure we understand where the pinch points are before we start to try to optimize. So I think it's not necessarily a technological challenge, it's a people process challenge. And it's something that we're always tempted to. We always want to see, a new and different or an innovative solution, but maybe sticking to the basics maybe is harder than you think.
You know, that point on the digital shift in the sector is profound. In wearing a past hat and a past career, leading a digital transformation for a port, you couldn't have done this initiative 10 years ago because of the digital maturity of the sector. Even 5 or 6 years ago, it would be tough. There's a requirement for API data exchange, and that requires a certain degree of digital maturity. But the sector, to its credit, has come a long way in a relatively short period of time, and does seem to be embracing new ways of doing things. So even organizations who aren't there yet, they have their plans to get there. That's a very good point, Paul.
I'll add maybe we spoke about neutrality a little earlier or trusted partners. One of the challenges is to make sure that the commercial interests don't overseed or don't give an edge to one carrier over another. So whatever data governance is there, or whatever way the way you actually structure or the architecture of the system has to stay neutral for all the parties.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because it is a question that we've received many questions on, especially because CSL has been a partner on this one. It's like, well, is this CSL system? It's like, no, it's not. This is a system that CSL has worked with us to create, and because they're a digitally focused and innovative organization, we've been very fortunate to have them. But they've done so with the realization that they can create better outcomes for all parties, of which they are one, and it takes a certain kind of digital leadership to take that particular view. So a tip of the cap to them as a partner for us. Sorry, Etienne, you've been trying to get a word in on this question.
No, exactly. But I just want to comment. I think some of the points were raised in that we have a really robust and safe system right now. And of course, any changes and disturbance in the force, if I might say, is always, we have to be cautious. And I think, as much as us at the Politics Authority, as all our partners here, want to make sure it's done in an orderly fashion and look at the ripple effect of any changes. It's, it's almost like changing the wheel while the truck is running. And it's always not simple. But I think the key is there is trust in building and kind of start making changes that are meaningful, that would actually help the different partners, and slowly the information flow, I think, will definitely help us have a better understanding of the total maritime environment in which we evolve. Because each reality is very different. If I look at Julien, you know, Tommy and Jack, they have very different realities that we have at the LPA, and different mandates, obviously, and we have to mesh somewhere in there. And I think platforms like this one can help, I think, bridge those gaps and have a better flow of information overall. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, excellent. Yes, the change management is complex for sure. So, the next question we have gets a bit more technical in nature, and may therefore be one that skews more towards me. Do you see the collaborative optimization solution evolving toward a federated data sharing model, where each stakeholder retains ownership of their data yet contributes insights to a shared decision layer? And if so, what do you think will be the biggest enabler or barrier to making that shift real? I'm going to actually pull up a slide just for a moment as part of an answer to this one. And once I've spoken to this, if others have comments to offer, I would welcome that as well. But just to say, you know, we today, this is designed as a federated data sharing model. And it's as you described, you know, people share the operational information that is of critical importance. They don't share information that they don't need to, but they also have information that they will always own. It will always be theirs. When CSL puts information in, it's always theirs. They have things that are commercially sensitive, but that are required for them to validate, for example, the fuel reductions that they're starting to realize from this. So no, absolutely, this idea that the federated data sharing model is very much the intent behind this is connect all the parties, not by going in there and replacing their system, but by having that federated data sharing platform to connect all the parties all the time. I'll stop sharing my screen. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have any and want to contribute to that one? It's a bit GSTS specific, but others may have some insights that they want to share.
I would say that it does stand or fall on back to that trust question that says, well, let's use an example of a terminal operator, since we don't have a terminal operator on the call here. But, you know, information on arrival, predicted departure time is obviously a key important metric for scheduling all sorts of other services. And to the extent that a terminal operator feels like they can manipulate the system by inputting a field, you know, then this collaboration will fail. And so you need to reach a point at which the level of trust that those data fields are the same data fields, you know, into the centralized data exchange as they are being used internally. And when you've reached that point, then I think a lot of that potential operational efficiencies and flow. But I think it's reaching that level of trust, that ability to provide, the willingness to provide what previously might have been perceived as sensitive operational or commercially sensitive information and put that into this wider model. Only then, I think, will you really see the benefits start to flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that. That's great.
I might add that from our perspective, the federated approach is also the right one, and we do want to maintain ownership of our information for sure. And touching on the technicality, so one way we're doing this is also building API gateways where partners such as GSTS and others can come and pull the information they need. But we do retain control of that gateway. We can also monitor who's coming to get that information and how. So the technology is a good enabler here because it allows us to monitor who's consuming and what's happening from the information exchange standpoint.
You know, I'm just going to jump backwards thank you, Julien. I jump backwards to something that Paul said about, you know, maritime stakeholders providing, you know, putting information in the system, but maybe it's not accurate, you know. And then one of the things that we know about today, and one of the problems that we endeavor to solve through this, is to have some ability to truth check things. And this, you know, this is actually a great use for machine learning, right? Is one of the things that the platform does is the vessels arriving, in this case, going up the St. Lawrence River. You know, we can look at, we know what the vessel characteristics are, we know what its typical speed it can and should be, we know the distance it has, we know pattern of life analysis on these things, things like that, we know upcoming risks. So if we realize that they have put something, you know, an ETA into Oceania that is more optimistic than what the current operating context dictates, then the machine learning can tell us, actually, no, that's not going to happen. Maybe we need to suggest for them that instead of planning to arrive for Wednesday at 4 p.m., maybe they should be planning to arrive for Thursday noon kind of thing, and you should plan your resources accordingly. Really, really important aspect that we didn't get into. I had a question on a specific shipping company and whether or not they were participating. I guess without mentioning the specific shipping company, what I will say is for the purpose of where we're at right now, going through this operational validation, that is being done with CSL. What I will say is that we're having a number of active dialogues with global and Canadian companies who are interested in a leading global container line. Last week, come out to us after a couple of my colleagues were presenting at a conference in Copenhagen. So we are starting to see some real global interest, and we want to continue to build out the, you know, different kinds. You know, the important to have many different kinds of ships there. This will be trialed at the Port of Montreal with many different classes of kinds of vessels, with all kinds of vessels that are coming to the port. So, but right now the CSL continues to be the major involved shipping company on this one.
I'll maybe add from the Seaways perspective, Andrew, that when the voyage information was developed from our end, we were lucky enough, I guess, to get five different carriers on board to work with us in developing. We're a different entity than GSDS from that perspective, but we're able to get five different carriers, and that one mentioned was one of them.
Yep. Excellent. Thank you, Jack. Another question that I'll read out. Do you foresee ports and shipping lines beginning to use predictive risk analytics as a joint planning tool rather than treating it as a post-event reporting mechanism? It's considering a very high stakes involved in basis of trust prediction on analytics. So do we see predictive risk analytics as a joint planning tool? As I mentioned in the slides, risk is multifaceted. Some of the operational risk is dealt with in this platform. I mentioned early on that that Oceania is a dual use platform, so it's being used by by organizations in Canada, in Europe, in the Southern Pacific, on different aspects of risk, on looking at some of the other things. I think that's a really, really interesting point. So it is used that way today, not necessarily by ports. And I think today is being used either by Coast Guards or navies and things like that. One of the reasons that we think, and it's, you know, it's a thought right now, it's a hypothesis, we think that this is going to shift into the ports domain. It's similar to what happened with ports in the environmental agenda. 12 years ago, it wasn't necessarily understood to be the port's responsibility to track emissions, and yet today, ports generally want to understand not just the emissions of their port, but also the major corridors that call it their port. Ports are asked to be good neighbors. And in particular, when you have things like, human trafficking or drug smuggling, the illicit trade happening and sometimes moved through ports. I do think that that idea of kind of collaborative and predictive risk analytics is really interesting. So really, really good question.
I'll chime in there, Andrew, and this is a work package I'm particularly passionate about. There, we talk a lot about the optimization from a supply chain efficiency perspective, but there is a work package as part of this project to better understand the risk, particularly, for instance, of I think the questioner is asking about understanding what might happen in the future. So you could say, okay, well, if a ship loses power, how quickly will it drift to shore? How exposed are we as a system? And so providing this system also can provide that kind of predictive risk analytics as an input to that optimization calculation? Because it's all very well to say we're optimizing for supply chain efficiency, but why we should also be optimizing for safety, right? So we can, if we have that analytical number that says this is the risk exposure of this ship, maybe we should bring it in a bit faster because that way we can mitigate the risk, then we can truly say that we are carrying out a collaborative optimization solution, not just one that hits the bottom line, something that actually improves the safety of the system that we're all tied together by.
Right, because things happen, right? Like and there is those things that, you know, I mean, there's so many different things that happen that we can all recognize, be it the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, be it backlogs resulting from COVID, be it challenges in the Strait of Hormuz. There's been so many different examples, memorable and distinct examples in recent years of things happening. We are getting, the world is getting better, and a major focus of us on the defense and security side in better of understanding some of those risks and allowing us to prepare maritime stakeholders accordingly for that. So again, really a really interesting and a really good question, but that one came up. We are fast approaching time here. I think I'm going to throw one more question out to the group, and then we'll call it a day. There's a lot of different bottlenecks in port calls, and Julien touched on many of them in his comments earlier. So how do we engage in some of the ones that are a bit more a bit less direct to the players, some of the players here? Labor forecasting, anchorage management, things like that. How does the collaborative optimization solution support in managing those?
As I said earlier, the fact that sometimes not everybody knows that the ship is going to stop before say in Montreal, if we know in advance by the collaborative information sharing, I'll be able to plan my anchorage better, better operations, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've worked for anchorages, speaking to you from Vancouver here on the Pacific coast of Canada. That is a really high profile issue. And if a solution like this can help to reduce the use of anchorages, there'll be a lot of interest in that.
Very good. I will note on the labor forecasting side of things, this is a conversation we're having with several people who are interested in engaging on exactly that. And it's not overly complicated. It's the same idea, is that, like, you know, you can plan your landside resources better once you understand the maritime resources. It is one supply chain and it's multifaceted. It's many stakeholders. It's complex, but therein lies the opportunity for system, for providers who want to do innovative things in that space. So again, I want to say a big thank you for everyone who's participated, for all the attendees that joined us here today. A heartfelt thank you to the collaborators who joined us on this from CSL, from Clear Seas, from Montreal, Port of Montreal, the Merchant Pilotage Authority, and from the Seaway. And then a thank you to Kayla at and others at Capital Link. We're delighted to have you all here today. Kayla.
And on behalf of Capital Link, we'd like to thank you, Andrew, the panel moderator, and GSTS, and our speakers, Paul, Tommy, Etienne, Julien, and Jack, for a very insightful discussion, and to everyone who joined us today. We had a great turnout throughout and hope you gained valuable takeaways on how Oceana and AI are driving smarter, greener operations across the maritime sector. The replay will be available soon through Capital Link's channels, www.capitallink.com, and our YouTube channel. We look forward to seeing you in our next event. Thank you.